Welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Schultz, and I'm joined again by John Lobb of Football Diehard. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing great, Jordan. Can't wait to talk about the NFC this week.
Yeah, it should be good. We had quite a few people really like our last AFC show, so that's what we like to hear. You know, obviously, if you like the show, please go give us a review on iTunes. That helps us move up the rankings a little bit. But we'll go ahead and jump right into it. We'll start off in the NFC East with my Dallas Cowboys. This is the first year in a while where I feel like I don't really have that great of like a grasp on how I think my team's backfield is going to play out. I think Ezekiel Elliott's clearly going to be the number one guy there. But then when you're kind of looking for a handcuff behind him, I think you're really kind of throwing darts with, you know, Darren McFadden, Alfred Morris, Lance Dunbar. So, you know, those are all guys that at certain times have shown flashes of being, you know, good NFL running backs. How do you think that that's going to shake out over there?
All right, so first, I'm in complete agreement with you. I love Ezekiel Elliott. I've been drafting him in the first round nearly every time if he's available after pick number six. I've never picked Ezekiel before pick six because there's other players, specifically the big wide receivers, who I prefer there. And when I do grab Ezekiel Elliott, so far I've been drafting Darren McFadden as the backup, the handcuff. Now, I'm watching this very closely because most of the leagues in which I've drafted the Dallas Cowboy running backs in, no one has selected Alfred Morris yet. And I think he could be a very, very sneaky play, but we have to see how McFadden looks during training camp and read the reports very closely. There is a chance, I would say about a 30% chance, that Alfred Morris beats out Darren McFadden for the second spot in the rotation and could have a fantasy impact. But if I was drafting today, I'm still going with Darren McFadden. I'm probably not going to draft three running backs on one squad, but it is a situation that we have to monitor very closely. One of the things that I believe that makes McFadden the Cowboys' preferred choice, is he's a much better pass catcher than Alfred Morris. I think you can put McFadden in for an entire offensive series to give Zeke a rest, and it won't change the flow of the offense. Once you bring Morris into the game, we've looked at the pass catching numbers. We've seen his stone hands on film and in games. He's just not a pass catcher, and that limits what you're going to do on offense. And the defense has maybe a tactical advantage when Morris is in the game. So I'm going with McFadden to back up Zeke on July 28th.
Yeah, as of now, I think I feel the same way. The news came out for McFadden today that it looks like he should be ready to go for week one. That being said, it is Darren McFadden, who in no way has been a pillar of health throughout his career. I think that if it turns out that, you know, if McFadden either isn't ready to go or just playing gets beat out and Alfred kind of steps into that number two spot, I think that does open up the door for Lance Dunbar to have a role too as well. Kind of how you mentioned Alf doesn't do much in the passing game, I think that that could open up some third downs for Lance Dunbar, who has shown some, you know, pretty good explosion. Last year had 21 catches for 215 yards before he went down with an injury in, I think, week four. So, I mean, he was on pace for a 1,000-yard rushing season before he got injured, so that's just another guy to keep an eye on, especially in PPR leagues. I think you can get him late, if not off waivers in a lot of leagues, and I think that he could be, you know, if things break right, I think Dunbar could be a weekly filling guy for you.
Absolutely. I think it was like the first month of the season in PPR leagues, Dunbar was a flex option on a weekly basis, and he produced for fantasy owners who put him into their lineups.
Yeah, absolutely. So just another deeper name to keep in mind. Moving on, we'll go over to the Giants. They are another team that kind of has a – they're similar to the Cowboys in that they have a lot of bodies there, but unlike the Cowboys, I don't think they have like one clear-cut option like the Cowboys do in Zeke. I think you're going to see Rashad Jennings open up the season as a starter with Shane Vereen getting the passing work. Andre Williams could, you know, vulture possibly a couple touchdowns at the goal line, but he's no one I really want to touch in a standard redraft league. Orleans Darkwell was a name that kind of had a little bit of hype last year, but I don't really see him being as too much of a challenge to the job. And then, you know, they get their rookie this year, Paul Perkins. As of now, if I'm going to touch any of these guys in a standard league, I'm probably just going to go with Jennings because I can get him late. Where do you see, like, the value at in the Giants' backfield right now?
I agree that Jennings is going to open the season barring an injury in the training camp preseason process. However, I'm not very interested in Rashad Jennings. While I really admired his competitiveness on the field and how he's played and what he's made of himself in the NFL, I don't think that he can make it through a 16-game season. He's on the backside of 30, which I know that there are running backs like Curtis Martin, and I'm old, John Riggins, and Tiki Barber have been productive into the 30s, but it is not the norm, so that bothers me a little bit. They do have Shane Vereen, who, if you're not in a PPR league, Shane Vereen has almost zero value to you. But I do think Shane Vereen will have some touches, and he will have an impact in the passing game. But the player that I'm targeting that I've been high on all year, coming out of the draft process, I loved him last year in college, UCLA running back Paul Perkins. Now, you have to be patient if you draft Paul Perkins. I think we have to watch how his pass production comes throughout the training camp and preseason, because with, like many rookies, to be able to pick up the nuances of pass blocking at the professional level can be challenging. But he was pretty good in college. Wasn't great, he was good. Now, he is elusive and dynamic in one-on-one situations. So I do believe once he picks up the pass blocking, because you have to protect Eli Manning, then you can put Perkins on the field. And I think you can scheme plays and opportunities for the rookie to be one-on-one against linebackers. So I prefer to target Paul Perkins around 14, 15 in my draft, and realize that I've got to be patient with him, and I might get return on investment like Jeremy Langford or Javarius Allen last year when they finally got an opportunity around week 8, 9, and 10.
Yeah, two things. It's interesting you said Javarius Allen. That was kind of a name I had stuck in the back of my head where you're kind of talking about being patient with the running back. I think that he could be similar to Javarius Allen last year, where he doesn't really do a lot over that, you know, the first half of the season, but, you know, down the stretch, once he, like you said, he kind of picks up the nuances of being an NFL running back. I think he could definitely play a role down the stretch. You kind of look back to college, he had 80 receptions over 3 years, so he's not going to be a non-factor there in the passing game either. Like you said, you know, very elusive and open speed. I do think that if you can get him cheap in like a dynasty startup draft, like if you can get him back towards the end of the first round or, you know, in a startup draft, you probably don't have to draft him in your standard redraft leagues. You can probably leave him on waivers, but it is a guy I'm throwing on a watch list. I think that he could be, you know, one of those rookies that has a late season push that kind of helps teams down the stretch in the fantasy playoffs. The other thing I wanted to mention on Rashad Jennings, you know, depending on your scoring system last year, he finished, you know, around, you know, between running back 20 and 24, so kind of a back end number two. But, you know, you look at his last four games of the season, starting in week 14 in Miami, 81 rushing yards, 107 against Carolina, 74 against Minnesota, 170 against Philly. If you take out those last 4 weeks of the season, he never even broke 80 yards rushing, only had one touchdown in those first 13 weeks. On the ground, that is. Yeah, of course, he had one through the air. But yeah, Jennings is a guy, just be wary of. His overall numbers don't look terrible last year, but it was really, really heavy in that last month.
Absolutely. He played great if you either got lucky and acquired him off the waiver wire in season-long leagues, or you put him into your lineups in DFS because of his salary. He really came on during that last month. I just can't see him doing it over a 16-game season, unfortunately.
Exactly. That's a key with him. So we'll go ahead and move on inside the division to the Philadelphia Eagles as they begin year one of, you know, the post-Chip Kelly era. Obviously, I think as of now, Ryan Matthews is slated in as a starter. He's on the active non-football injury list for camp. Walking without a noticeable limp is what the notes say, but it looks like he should be okay for week one. I think he's probably your number one running back there in Philly to start the year off. In a PPR league, Darren Sproles, you know, a good cheap flex play in there. Looking down past them, you know, they still got KenJohn Barner on the roster. Byron Marshall showing some speed in Oregon. But the guy that I'm kind of interested in from a dynasty perspective is Wendell Smallwood. I think that, you know, long-term, he could be the guy that really kind of steps in there and becomes, you know, that running back they wanted McFadden to be. Not that they're the same running back. But, yeah, where are you standing at on that Philadelphia backfield right now?
at this time, I definitely am in a different boat than most fantasy analysts. I have not drafted Ryan Matthews on any of my fantasy teams, and I understand that he definitely has value, and I know the season he had, I believe it was in 2013, with Ken Whisenhunt on the San Diego Chargers, and he played very well, by far his best football of his career. And at times last year, he clearly looked like the best back on Chip Kelly's Eagles. I'm just not willing to take the risk with Matthews. I think the history shows us that he has a difficult time remaining on the field. As I alluded to, only once in 2013 did he remain on the field for the vast majority of the time. I wonder if his over-under on games played in Las Vegas would be about 10.5. What side would you take? I would probably bet the under on that. So I'm not targeting Matthews. I would much prefer to grab Wendell Smallwood later in the draft. Now, he's a little bit small. He's coming from a spread offense at West Virginia. He had lots of open lanes, and he didn't have to face the linebackers and the safeties that he's going to have to in the NFL. But I think there's value there and NFL potential in Wendell Smallwood. Personally, I'm just staying away from the Eagles running back kind of conundrum. I'll let someone else dabble and try to find out the productive running back. And I know the Eagles have a soft run schedule. I know that the Eagles offense is rated in the top 5. And I do like the system that the head coach is bringing into Philadelphia, Doug Peterson. I'm just not willing to invest in it. I'd rather go elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I always get kind of skeptical when you see like those numbers come out on teams during the preseason. I don't know how, you know, you can really rank the Philadelphia inside that top 5 offense without seeing what they're going to do in this new regime. Like, I remember, what was it, 2 years ago when Lazor headed to Miami and all the talk was how Ryan Tannehill was going to, you know, be the new Nick Foles after Foles had just came off of his amazing, amazing year. And, you know, it's, you know, 3 years later and you're still kind of yet to see him take that step that, you know, everyone expected just because Bill Lazor was taking over there. It's interesting. I don't have a single running back in this division on any of my fantasy teams I've drafted this year. I think about the only ones I'd really want would be Ezekiel Elliott if I had, you know, a top pick, or, you know, maybe Ryan Matthews later in the draft. But the injury concerns with Matthews are real. I mean, it's tough when you look at him. He averages over, like, you know, well above 4 yards per carry for his career. So when he's active, he puts up numbers. It's just, it seems like every few games, every single time you see him get hit, you're holding your breath, hoping for him to get up and not be limping off the field. We'll go ahead and move on to the last team in the division here, and that's
one, you know, quick question. It's, yeah, over under Las Vegas, $100. What side you taking, Jordan?
On the 10.5, I'd have to take the under. As much as I like Matthews as a player, I'd go under on that one as well.
We're in agreement. That's true, you know.
Yeah. All right, so we'll go ahead and move on to last squad in this this division, possibly the most cloudy running back situation of them all. Matt Jones is, you know, projected to be the starter. He had flashes of looking very good last year. He's a better pass catcher than people realize. But if, you know, it falls apart and Matt Jones isn't able to carry the load, I don't really know where they're looking after here. You know, you got Chris Thompson. He's, you know, a PPR name to keep in mind. Keith Marshall, 7th-round running back out of Georgia, had, you know, a ton of potential, ton of talent, just has had injury issues over his career. This, if you're talking about backfields, I'm staying away from, unless I can get Matt Jones super, super late, I'm not going to touch pretty much anybody in this backfield.
Yeah, I have not drafted Matt Jones, and I know there's a lot of chatter on Twitter, and a lot of experts like Matt Jones and the value, but I'm not going to get bamboozled by value. Obviously, opportunity matters, but sometimes I just don't like the talent and the mix of the opportunity and the team. I think this is a throwing division, so I think that's one of the reasons why we're both not enamored with a lot of these running backs. I have not seen Matt Jones do it yet. I understand that he has talent. I had him ranked, I think, in the top 12 of my prospects coming out 2 years ago. I watched him last year when he got some opportunities, but it was a mixed bag. I mean, you take out one or two very explosive dynamic runs, and his numbers are really pedestrian. So I'm not going for Matt Jones. Chris Thompson, I like as a deep, deep, maybe a sixth running back on a PPR team. I don't know if Chris Thompson can even carry the ball 10 times a game. So I think you're looking at him strictly in a PPR mold. I have to be honest, I'm shocked that the Washington Redskins did not address this backfield during the draft or in the offseason. I mean, to go into the season and open training camp with Matt Jones and Chris Thompson at the top of your board, I'm really surprised. Now, I've heard rumors of guys like Pierre Thomas. I could see him maybe making the team out there because you have veteran leadership. He's a good pass catcher. He can pass block. He's not an extraordinary player, but I definitely think that the Redskins still need help in the backfield. I'm not comfortable drafting anyone there. I'm seeing Matt Jones go off in the fourth and fifth rounds.
That's too early.
I'd much rather have my third or fourth wide receiver than draft Matt Jones, and I'd rather dig deeper for value in round 7 or 8.
Yeah, same here. One more note, just I kind of mentioned Keith Marshall quickly. He is a guy that in a dynasty league I do kind of think is an interesting late round target. He fell to the 7th round. Like I said, a lot of that was due to injuries. Obviously, the combine is, you know, a very inexact science, but he did lead all running backs there in, you know, 40-yard dash and bench press. And, you know, he's got good NFL size, just under 6 foot, 220 pounds. So just a guy in Dynasty you can get for pretty much free. Guy I think that's worth keeping an eye on because, you know, if Matt Jones, they may give Matt Jones this year to try and figure it out. But if, you know, at the end of the year, he's looking like, you know, a pedestrian average running back and Marshall gets another year to get healthy, sitting there on the bench, kind of learning underneath him. I do think that he's a guy that in Dynasty is a sneaky play that could have a big payoff that you can get for next to nothing.
I agree with that. I mean, I did like Marshall in the draft process, and I thought that was actually an astute pickup by the Redskins. I'm just not sure how he'll perform yet on the field, but you're right. I forgot about him. I think he's someone you have to watch.
Yeah, but nothing more at this point. Don't blow your bank on him. So let's go ahead and head up north. We'll go ahead and start off with the Chicago Bears. When you're talking about, you know, running backs that or situations that really don't have a clear-cut leader, I think you could pretty fairly put Chicago in that mix. Jeremy Langford's probably going to be the guy that starts off the year. You know, looked pretty good last year. Behind that, Kadeem Carey, he's okay. Nothing that I'm really too worried about. But they did draft Jordan Howard this year, who looks like he could be a threat to take away some of the work. Another one of the backfields that I actually like, I like Langford and I like Howard, but I haven't ended up with them in any of my drafts yet. Where are you standing on the Chicago Bears as of, you know, July 28th right now?
Now, compared to the Redskins and the Eagles, I am more interested in the Bears backfield, and it's really just because of the value. And I am a believer in John Fox. He, you know, when you look at his professional record at Carolina and then at Denver, and even last year in Chicago, he has had productive running backs. He's going to do two schematic things. He's going to run the football, and he's going to pass rush and hit the opposing quarterback. That's a John Fox team, and it's a blueprint for every organization that he's been in charge of. Now, we all have read his fantasy fans, and we've heard Mike Clay of ESPN. Mm-hmm. Wrote and spoke about how unproductive Jeremy Langford was as a rookie on the Chicago Bears last year. Now, I understand what the numbers say, but I had also seen him play. And for some reason, there seems to be a disparity from his production on the field and the eyeball test and what the actual analysis is from the numbers and the film. So there is a little bit of a downgrade. So I actually think Jeremy Langford is coming at a value. If you can get a starting running back in round 8, I think it's hard to bypass that value. So I'm willing to go for Langford late as long as it doesn't cost me much. And then I did like Jordan Howard coming out of the draft process. I think he was very productive at Indiana last year. He was extraordinarily productive at UAB before the program went under. He has all of the skill set that you're looking for in an NFL back. So I'm definitely interested in dynasty leagues and late round picks taking Jordan Howard. And I agree with you. Kadeem Carey is a very interesting piece to pay attention to. I don't think he's out of the mix. I think he might play a role in this Chicago Bears offense by the end of the season. So I think it's someone that we have to watch very closely. And if there an injury occurs, I would not be surprised if Carey might get a start ahead of Howard early in the season because he's been in the system and he's a veteran. And I did like Kadeem Carey coming out of Arizona. I thought he had a nice skill set that would translate to the NFL. So I think we have to watch this Bears backfield. But I'd rather go to Chicago than definitely either take anything in Washington or Philadelphia.
Yeah, I agree completely. If Langford, you know, he had 22 catches last year. Most of those came in, you know, a stretch of, you know, between weeks, let's see here, weeks 9 and 14. He had, let's see, 13, 14, 19, 20 catches of his 22 of the season. I think, you know, you saw what Matt Forte could do as a pass-catching running back in that Bears offense. I think that if Langford can, you know, step up and be that guy that can catch passes for them as well on a consistent basis, he's going to find himself on the field all three downs for a lot of the settings. So I do agree that Langford is a value play there. Howard didn't show much as a pass catcher in college, so I could see him maybe taking that short yardage and goal line work. But as of now, Langford is definitely the guy there. Let's go ahead and move on to a backfield I am quite a bit more excited about, and that's the Detroit Lions. There's two guys there that I'm getting in almost every single league, and that's Ameer Abdullah and Theo Riddick. I'm probably way higher on Theo Riddick than probably pretty close to everybody, even in like just your standard leagues. I think he's going to do enough just in the pass-catching game that he's going to have some standard league value as well. You look last year, he led running backs for receptions with 80. You take away Calvin Johnson from that offense, I think there's a chance that these guys could be trailing some games. So that's going to keep Theo on the field even more. I think that there's a chance that he blows past that 80 catches and gets up closer to, you know, 90, 95 this year. I could see that yardage coming up at him, you know, actually getting in the end zone a few times in the air.
I think Theo Riddick is a great pick. Now, obviously, in PPR leagues, he has much more value. And I can make an argument that I'd rather have Theo Riddick than Danny Woodhead, because Danny Woodhead's going to cost you a fifth-round pick, and Theo Riddick's coming off. I was looking around ADP, I think either late eighth round, early ninth round. So in PPR leagues, I like Theo Riddick a ton. And I tend to agree with you. I think in standard leagues, you could get him dirt cheap. But he's going to put up enough yardage and probably score enough touchdowns as a pass catcher. If you were in a standard league with the flex, I think you might be able to get some numbers and production out of Theo Riddick. Now, the wild card to me, because I think we kind of know Theo Riddick's role.
Mm-hmm.
The wild card is definitely Ameer Abdullah. How is he going to perform this year? I was high on Ameer Abdullah coming out of Nebraska. He had a great junior and senior year for the Cornhuskers. He is incredibly elusive in the open field, and he's a dynamic runner between the tackles. But he is a little bit on the small side, and he didn't show us last year what we had seen in college. But backs get better with experience sometimes. Sometimes they need 1 or 2 years to really crystallize and hit the promise that we expected out of them. So I clearly think Ameer Abdullah, if he's on the board and you're in the seventh round, I think he has value and he's clearly worth drafting. I expect him to play much better this year than he did last year. I like both Detroit running backs also. I probably prefer Theo Riddick in a PPR league and Ameer Abdullah in a standard league.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'm very high on Abdullah too. I think there's a chance that both of those running backs could play a big role, like similar to not necessarily in playing style, but similar to a Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, where there's a lot of weeks, so they're both going to be startable. So I want to run a trade I made in my Dynasty League by you, and I kind of want you to grade it and tell me which side you prefer the two. It involved, you know, Ameer Abdullah, so that's why I thought it was kind of relevant. So in my main Dynasty League, I gave up Todd Gurley, Michael Floyd, pick 206, and then a second round pick next year, and I got back pick 103, who ended up being Laquan Treadwell, Allen Robinson, and Ameer Abdullah. What side of that do you prefer?
I have to mull it over for 2 seconds.
It's a half point PPR as well.
Half point PPR. I think I prefer to be on the side with Todd Gurley and Michael Floyd, because I think in a half-point PPR league, Todd Gurley is the most valuable piece because he isn't a dynamic pass catcher, but the difference in Allen Robinson and Michael Floyd in a half-point PPR might be mitigated. So I think the difference between the two is not going to be as large of a gap. And I love Gurley in the Rams, so I think he can be a special dynamic player. And if I can get that top running back in a half-point PPR league, I'm definitely going to do anything I can to get that top running back. Now, Treadwell makes it interesting because I'm a big Treadwell believer. Some people aren't. So you definitely got a valuable piece there. And we're going to have to see what Treadwell turns out to be. Now, I believe that he's going to be a very good player long-term, have a very nice NFL career. This year, I even think he's going to be good as a freshman. I've drafted him on a bunch of fantasy teams late. I have confidence in Treadwell. So I think it's a very close trade. But if I can get that stud running back, I'm going to stay on that side.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. I'm the same way with you. We're in Dynasty. I value Gurley as probably the number one player in all of fantasy at any position. So when the guy came for me looking to trade, I told him, you know, I was going to need a lot back. I probably could have got a little bit more on the running back side, but it's kind of one of those, you know, set half-point PPR. So I have a couple. I got Mark Ingram as my number one running back, Carlos Hyde, and then I have a few guys like Theo Riddick that can, you know, contribute from the pass-catching game. So that's why I was okay letting Gurley go. But yeah, I thought it was a very close trade. I put that poll out on Twitter, and it's about, you know, 55 to 60% on the Allen Robinson side, but a lot of people strong on that Gurley side. So I just kind of wanted to see where you stood on that. But we'll go ahead and move on. No one, you know, really cares about my fantasy teams. So we'll go ahead and move on to Green.
I do. That's not true. I do. And I think it was a fair trade. I mean, I'd say it's about 50. I would have thought the poll would be 55-45 on the Robinson side.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I guess I should add in that trade, it's an IDP league, and I got Ezekiel Ansah back. But that's, you know, an IDP, unless it's, you know, J.J. Watt. It's just kind of a throw-in, in my opinion. But we'll go ahead and we'll move on to Green Bay. Over there, I think you pretty much have to keep an eye on Eddie Lacy and James Stark. Anything behind them is just your throwing darts.
Absolutely. Now, I think Eddie Lacy will be the comeback player of the year. I said it in the fantasy football dive. Yeah, I had him as my comeback player of the year in the Fantasy Football Diehards Pro Forecast magazine. Now, while I do like Eddie Lacy to be much more productive than he was last year, I just have not drafted him because he seems to be going off early third round. And for some reason, I'm either drafting late third round or I think there's a more valuable receiver. But I really wouldn't have a problem taking Eddie Lacy, like, maybe around pick 30. I think he will bounce back. He's in the contract year, and I know we don't like the narrative. It doesn't always work sometimes, and I believe there have been research that shows that contract year players don't necessarily perform any better than any other individual player. But I have to think he's got a little bit of motivation there. I like that Coach Mike Mularkey – not Mike Mularkey – oh, why am I going blank? Green Bay coach for a second.
McCarthy.
I like that he called him out about his weight in the offseason. I think he did the right thing from a motivational and coaching technique. There's nothing wrong with calling out your stud running back, and he's got to be in shape. Last year, I'm kind of just, for now, I'm going to look at as hopefully an anomaly when I look at the end of Eddie Lacy's career. This was a bump in the road. I have no problem drafting Eddie Lacy. I expect good things out of him, much better. And obviously, James Stark, to me, is the only one with value, unless there seems to be a training camp comet that shoots across the sky or someone they were undrafted who might be ready to perform at the NFL level. I just don't see anyone else on that Green Bay roster in the backfield I'm looking at.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I mean, you look at Eddie Lacy, what he did as a rookie, and, you know, I believe he won Rookie of the Year, didn't he?
He did.
Yes. And so, I mean, you look at what he did as a rookie, I mean, you would think that moving forward that would have been close to his floor. I'm kind of with you where I tend to think that maybe that last season was just kind of an anomaly. It was, you know, troublesome for sure. But I definitely still am on board with Eddie Lacy in Green Bay. I think that, I don't know if he'll be the comeback player of the year, but I think he'll definitely be one of those players you're looking at in that breath when you come to the end of the year. I mean, you look at James Stark, he's quite a bit older. He had a good year last year, But, I mean, you have to imagine that they're going to give Lacy every chance to, you know, take the job and run with it. So I think, like you said, unless you hear something in training camp that really throws up a bunch of red flags, you're pretty safe grabbing Lacy as a third-round pick. We'll go ahead and move on to the last team in this division, and that's the Minnesota Vikings. I think their running back situation is, you know, fairly set. I mean, obviously, Adrian Peterson, he's okay, I guess. but outside of him, I think Jerick McKinnon is one of the most valuable handcuffs, a must-own player in a dynasty league. I think there's a chance he could have some PPR value this year. Moving past him, there's not anyone I'm really targeting too hard. I think it's pretty much a two-horse race up in front in Minnesota.
Absolutely. I mean, Adrian Peterson, I'm not going to speak too much because anyone who's played this game, he's just a special player. He's clearly a Hall of Fame running back. I've enjoyed every carry I've seen of Adrian Peterson. I've had him in keeper leagues, seasonal leagues. I've just enjoyed this man's career. We're not going to talk about the off-the-field issues. Right. It is what it is, and that's in the past as far as I'm concerned. But he's a special dynamic player. I do enjoy him. I agree with you. Jerick McKinnon is clearly the handcuff. He might be more valuable in PPR leagues, but you have to put him on your roster if you have AP. You never know in week 16 what if the Vikings have clinched and they rest AP. There's always injury concerns, so I like McKinnon a ton. The only monkey wrench in the whole situation is that Matt Asiata.
Yep.
Man, boy, is that guy, you know, I had him 2 years ago when AP was suspended. And Matt Asiata, even though the numbers were ugly, the yards per carry were ugly, I remember he got into the end zone and he made two or three catches every week. He almost always got me double digits in 2014. So he is a little monkey wrench that you have to be aware of.
Yeah, more of a goal line vulture. If you're in a super, super deep league and, you know, you got a couple running backs on bye, you could do worse than, even with a healthy Adrian Peterson, you could do worse than throwing out Asiata because he's a guy that, like you said, kind of seems like a touchdown magnet when he gets on the field. Moving back to Jerick McKinnon a little bit, I mean, obviously everyone knows Adrian Peterson and what he's about. But Jerick McKinnon, you know, I have two of my dynasty league drafts, slow drafts going on right now, like my two home leagues, I would call them. And I've grabbed McKinnon, and I think both of them as a late round pick, even without Adrian Peterson on my team, just because I do think that, you know, looking past this year, I think that even as soon as next year, Adrian Peterson's future is cloudy. I think anytime a running back, even a superhuman like Adrian Peterson, when they get up to his age, you kind of have to just kind of look at them as on a year-by-year basis. And at any point, you know, it seems like running backs don't usually slowly ride off in the glory. They hit a wall and they fall off quick, like a Sean Alexander type. Very few guys have been able to really extend it like a Matt Forte has, but that's more of his skill set. So McKinnon, if you know, say you're looking forward to next year and you're telling me that he can come in and, you know, be that starter, what type of fantasy player do you think? Do you think he could be, you know, a high-end running back one if he was getting, you know, 300 carries a year or 300 touches a year? Or do you think he's more of a, you know, like a PPR specialist, a mid to late running back too, even if he's, you know, got starting job?
I question if he could be a 300-touch running back. I'm not convinced he could. I would write, and not trying to pull the middle ground, but I think he would be a running back two with more valuable in PPR leagues. I think in an ideal scenario, McKinnon would get about 200 carries and maybe 50 to 60 receptions. And you would probably need another short yardage runner, maybe a goal line runner. So I don't foresee him being a clear-cut number one runner. I think he'd be a spectacular number two, and he'd be awesome in PPR leagues. But I don't think he's a 300-touch guy from what I have seen so far. Now, maybe there's something on film this year that I see some growth. Maybe I could see that he might be able to take on that role of a 300-touch. I just don't see it at this point in his career.
Yeah, that's completely fair. So let's go ahead and head down south right now. We'll start off with the Atlanta Falcons. Devonta Freeman there, you know, was a very, very good fantasy running back, even over the last, you know, few weeks of the season when the efficiency wasn't really there and his yards per carry were, you know, pretty close to dreadful. He still found a way to put up those fantasy numbers, which, you know, at the end of the day in fantasy, that's all you really care about. You've heard a lot of talk about them wanting to get Tevin Coleman more involved this year. He was a guy I liked coming out of college last year. So I think that, you know, Freeman and Coleman in a standard league or even standard PPR league are pretty much the only two guys I'm really touching there. Do you think Do you think Freeman can continue to be, you know, a top three fantasy running back, or do you think he kind of comes back down to earth a little bit this year?
That is seems to be one of the key questions in the Twitter universe and the fantasy football world this offseason. And I can't believe that he has fallen so far down. And ironically, I'm not a big Devontae Freeman fan this year, but I actually think he's getting underrated right now in some very strange way. I mean, we hear all this chatter about Tevin Coleman, and I had him ranked, I think, fourth coming out of the draft at Indiana. But he definitely did not produce when he got the opportunities last year. I actually was underwhelmed by Tevin Coleman when he was on the field. So I wonder if this love affair isn't a little bit hyperbole by the whole universe about Coleman. Because what we do know is when Freeman is healthy and in that Shanahan system, he has been extraordinarily productive. He's been a pass catcher. He's been a goal line back. He's been a thumper, and he can handle the workload. So I have absolutely no problem drafting Devontae Freeman. I think he's a value in the second round. I'm kind of looking right now, who do you rather have, Le'Veon Bell or Devontae Freeman? I think that's a real legitimate question if you're in the second round. I think this Le'Veon Bell thing is going to go all off season. I think everyone's going to have their different perspective on Le'Veon Bell. Freeman, to me, is the end of the number one tier of running backs. And I do see him going in the second round. I don't think I've been in a draft or looked at in a draft that had Freeman going in the first round, unless it's a standard league. Mm-hmm. But most of what I see is PPR leagues. I think he does have more value in a standard league.
Yeah.
But in PPR, you know, in PPR league, Freeman's falling to the second round. And I think if you can get a stud like that in a Shanahan offense – in the second round, I think you have to go for it. I think he's a no-brainer there.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think it's crazy that people are really, really kind of debating on if, you know, Coleman's going to cut that much into Freeman's touches. I mean, last year Freeman had over 1,500 total yards and 14 touchdowns. I mean, even if he comes back down to 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, that's still a top five running back. PPR, he's going to, you know, bump him up even more. He had 73 catches on 97 targets. I'm totally fine making Freeman my number one running back in a fantasy league. I'm not overthinking it there. When you're talking about Le'Veon Bell versus Freeman, at this point, give me Freeman. You know, four games isn't a ton, but that's still, you know, a quarter of the season. That's, you know, 4 weeks you got to try and make up for that production. With Freeman, you shouldn't have to worry about that. I think his pass-catching ability kind of gives him some built-in insulation that even on the weeks where the running isn't there, he's going to salvage your fantasy day because he's going to catch some passes. And, you know, he's a big threat. You know, had three touchdowns through the air last year. So I like his skill set a lot. I think he's like one of the new version of an ideal fantasy running back that can get out and catch passes too. Let's go ahead and move on to the Panthers. Jonathan Stewart, he's a guy I like quite a bit for a one-year league. In that Dynasty League I mentioned earlier where I traded away Gurley, I actually made another trade after to bring in Jonathan Stewart for super, super cheap. So I felt a little better about, you know, getting a little bit more running back depth there after losing Gurley. But we'll after Jonathan Stewart, you know, the story with him, he's going to be pretty damn good when he's on the field. Injuries are going to be a concern. You look past him, I think Cameron Artis Payne is, you know, the pretty clear-cut handcuff there. Where do you stand on Jonathan Stewart this year? Are you still buying him in a one-year league, or are you kind of looking for the beginning of the end for him?
I think it might be the beginning of the end, and I've had Jonathan Stewart the last 2 years on nearly every redraft team. So I've watched him, and I love Cam Newton, so I watched the Panthers, and I've watched basically every snap of Jonathan Stewart. And he is definitely a hit or miss. I mean, sometimes you watch the skills and the run he makes, and you're like, wow, what a great player. And then you'll just see him, like, for a quarter, you're like, what is with the Panthers? They're not getting the ball in his hand, or he's running right into a tackle. He doesn't seem to be making anything happen. And then obviously they love Cam there, the goal line, so there's always a lack of rushing touchdowns. But I wonder if Stewart, just the years and the age haven't caught up with him a little bit. I know there's a lot of fantasy people who are willing to draft Stewart in round 6 or 7, and I understand why the value is there, and I could see them doing that. I just haven't made that. I'm kind of bypassing Stewart in every draft. I've actually taken Curtis Artis Payne in like round 14 of four teams already. And I'm not convinced that he's going to be anything great, but I think there might be an opportunity late in the season. What if Jonathan Stewart got hurt early in the season? I know Mike Tolbert's there, but I have serious concerns about Mike Tolbert as far as being an every down back anymore. I think he's a goal line short yardage specialist. You know, he's a good pass blocker so that he gets some time on the field. But I actually think for the price, I'm going with Curtis Artis Payne right now. And I just don't have any shares of Jonathan Stewart. I know a lot of people like him, but I've had him the last 2 years, and I wonder about what he's going to do this year. So I'm looking elsewhere for value.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about another guy that you're holding your breath every single time he gets tackled as well. Stewart definitely fits that mold. Yeah, I think Jonathan Stewart still is pretty clear-cut the guy I want to own there. I'm okay holding on to Stewart for one more year. Like I said, with a lot of running backs, when they get to this age, I think that's year to year anyways. And I think, you know, he has just as much potential to put up, you know, a top 12, top 14 running back season as anyone else kind of going around him. Dynasty, unless you're, you know, a team like I was where, you know, just need one running back piece to try and get over the top, I'm probably avoiding him. I'm trying to sell him. But we'll go ahead and move on to the New Orleans Saints. Another guy that has, you know, another team that has a guy that's pretty clear cut number one when he's healthy, but that's, you know, kind of the issue. Mark Ingram last year. I have him on every single team pretty much. I do like his skill when he's on the field. I think that you're going to be able to get his handcuff super cheap if, you know, he does get hurt, whether that ends up being, you know, Tim Hightower again, or if CJ Spiller can kind of come back and be the guy that we thought he would be. Either way, you're going to get the handcuff cheap, and I think when you get Ingram, you're going to be very happy with the production. Underrated pass catcher. He had 50 receptions last year for 405 yards. A lot of people don't realize how good he was in the pass catching game. I'm totally on board with if you kind of, you know, go running back or wide receiver in round one, round two, and come back and get Ingram as your running back one in the third round. I am 100% on board with that strategy.
Oh, I think that's a great. I've seen that a couple leagues that I've been in, owners have done that exact strategy, especially those owners who are drafting in the first three picks. They go wide receiver, and early in that third round, they take Ingram. I've also seen Ingram go late in the second round. So I love Ingram. I think he's a terrific player. Right now, he's clearly the best player in the New Orleans backfield. I mean, at this point, I'm not going to fall for the CJ Spiller. I got trapped in it last year. I drafted CJ Spiller in round 5 and 6 on a lot of my teams, far too many. I had to suffer through him and work the waiver wire and get some value to replace, you know, a flex position PPR back. And I thought he was going to be special in Buffalo. He had that one great season. I just have zero confidence in CJ Spiller. I'm not interested in him in any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, I had Tim Hightower late in the year.
Me too. That guy was amazing.
Oh, he was so good. He actually led one of my teams to a title.
Yeah, the one league I won last year was a mixture of a Tim Hightower, D'Angelo Williams backfield that carried me through the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Hightower was so good. I mean, so I think if you got a Mark Ingram in your third round, then you definitely have to come back by probably round 11, and I would grab Hightower. I'd have zero interest in CJ Spiller. I think Tim Hightower has something left in the tank. I mean, he obviously doesn't have a lot of carries under his belt. He didn't play in the NFL for a long time.
No, he's a very, very, very fresh 30-year-old.
Yeah, he's not your typical 30-year-old. So I'd have no problem backing up Mark Ingram with Tim Hightower.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm the same way here. You take away one catch in overtime that CJ Spiller had against my Cowboys last year, and he was essentially a non-factor the rest of the fantasy season. I'm not touching him even in Dynasty League. I think that I'm going Mark Ingram, Hightower, or I'm just not going to back up Hightower at all. But there's no one else in that backfield I'm looking at right now. So let's hit up this last team here in the South. You know, as an Idaho native, I got lucky enough to see Doug Martin in person quite a few times when he was at Boise State dominating over teams. You finally kind of saw that bounce back last year that everyone was expecting. expecting from him out of that, you know, monstrous rookie year that was, you know, in all fairness, inflated by two or three games. But outside of Doug Martin, you got Charles Sims there, who, you know, had a 50-catch season last year. I think you can pretty much expect that again. But this is one of the more clear-cut backfields, I think. I think Doug Martin's going to be your, you know, for the most part, your every-down back, and Charles Sims is going to get some work on passing downs. Other than that, I'm not really too interested in anyone else in this team. Are you the same way there?
Absolutely. Now, I have not actually drafted Martin, and I like him. I have him ranked number 8 among my running backs this year, and I think he'll have a very good season. But why I'm not targeting him is I'm really interested in Charles Sims. I think on about 90% of my clubs throughout this process, this 2016 draft season, I've been taking Charles Sims in the 8th round. He had over 500 yards rushing. He had over 500 yards receiving. He was a terrific player in PPR leagues. I love the fact that they keep the same offensive coordinator. I think both roles are well defined in Tampa Bay. And what if Martin got, you know, if he was out for a game or two, Charles Sims could step in and maybe you get real big games. He could be the lead guy for a game or two. So I'm 100% with you on Charles Sims. I do like Doug Martin. If I was in a standard league, I would be higher on Martin, and I might bypass Charles Sims. But I'm all in on Sims, so I'm taking him in nearly every league. I love him.
Yeah, I think that's probably right there. I think the Bucks offense as a whole is going to improve. I'm one of the most pro Jameis Winston people in the fantasy industry, I would say. I know there's some people that like him, but I like Jameis a lot. I was huge on him coming out of college. I think you look at the weapons around him. If you can get Doug Martin that you got last year, Charles Sims is, you know, a little safety valve, and then of course Mike Evans out there. I think that the weapons are there for that Buccaneers offense to take another step. I could see them challenging for a wild card spot this year. But let's go ahead and keep sticking with running backs. We'll head over to the last division we're going to talk about today. We'll start with the, in my opinion, the easiest one in this backfield or in this division, and that's the Los Angeles Rams. We've already, you know, talked about Todd Gurley. If you're looking for a handcuff there, probably Trey Mason. Benjamin Cunningham's kind of a name to keep in the back of your mind. But, I mean, it's pretty much Gurley or bust for me in this backfield. There's not a lot else to say.
No, it's pretty simple. I mean, we know what Jeff Fisher is going to do. He's been seeking the Eddie George clone for at least a decade. He believes that if he's going to reach the playoffs and eventually get to a Super Bowl again, he's going to do it with a dominant defense and a running game. I love Gurley. He's a spectacular runner. He's the perfect player in this Jeff Fisher offense. I guess you could go Mason. I'm not targeting Mason. I'm not that interested, but obviously late in the draft, you're looking for Gurley's handcuff. He's the guy. I love Gurley. I have him ranked number 2 amongst running backs. In a standard league, I can make the argument that he's the number 1 overall pick. But I think Gurley is a solid guarantee to get 300 touches, if not 325, and be a beast in the red zone. I love Gurley this year.
Yeah, 100% agree. Got nothing to add there. Let's go ahead and move on to San Francisco. I think on talent, it's not a question. Carlos Hyde is by far and away the best runner they have there. Obviously, you got Chip Kelly coming in, which theoretically should be a huge boost for Hyde. But you look at what happened with DeMarco Murray, and that, you know, 100% was not the case. I still like Carlos Hyde quite a bit. I'm buying him in pretty much any league I can get him in. I believe in the talent. I had him as my number 1 running back coming out when he came out of Ohio State. I still think he's got that type of upside there. Obviously, you know, Sean Drons on the roster, DeJuan Harris, Mike Davis, I guess, is there. Not really one clear-cut handcuff to him, but I do like Carlos Hyde quite a bit. I would value him probably as a top 8, top 9 running back for me this year. Where do you stand on Hyde and then, I guess, the 49ers in general?
So I'm clearly one of the contrarians in the industry because I have zero interest in Carlos Hyde.
Okay.
I was lower out of the draft process on Hyde than most draft Knicks. I kind of felt that Carlos Hyde was a product of a spread offense. I did not think he was as good of a prospect as Ezekiel Elliott. I thought Ezekiel Elliott is a much better player than Carlos Hyde. When I watched Hyde at Ohio State, what I saw was a lot of the parting of the Red Sea by that Ohio State offensive line. He is not a good pass catcher. I'm shocked at how many people are talking about Carlos Hyde as being a pass catcher in a Chip Kelly offense. While I think the opportunity might be there, I just don't think Carlos Hyde can make the catches. I think his hands are terrible. I don't think he's a good route runner. I have lots of questions about Carlos Hyde, but I'm definitely in the minority. He's clearly going in the fourth round of all drafts. I'm not a believer in Chip Kelly. I think this San Francisco has a 2-14 season written all over it. And whenever there's a team with a 2-14 record, I usually ignore the running backs. I'd rather go to the wide receivers because I might get garbage time. And I'm not sure that Carlos Hyde will even be on the field in garbage time because I question his ability to pass block and, more importantly, to catch the football. I'm very different than all the other experts out there. I did not like Carlos Hyde last year. I kind of got a little bit, you know, it was luck. He got injured, so he had a terrible season. I had him as my bust of the year last year. I have zero interest in Carlos Hyde. I'd actually almost rather go Sean Drone, but I think that's, you know, that might be a little hyperbole. Mm-hmm. I think really everyone else on that San Francisco roster right now is a waiver wire pickup. But I'd rather go, I'd rather go Bruce Ellington and Torrey Smith, but that's for another podcast down the road. But I don't have any shares of Carlos Hyde.
Well, I that's interesting. We'll have to kind of maul into that, maybe make a couple bets on him when it gets a little closer. But the one thing that you mentioned, I'm glad you brought up, and that was going to be where you mentioned that, you know, you think San Francisco could be a 2-14 team this year. That was the one thing I was going to say that's a negative for me personally on Hyde. Is not the talent. I think I disagree. I do think that he's, you know, a very talented player. I think that he has a talent to be one of the top five running backs in the league. The one thing I could see working against him this year is that game script. I could see San Francisco getting their asses kicked in a lot of games, and then the running opportunities just not being there. And then it comes down to, you know, how much faith you have him as a pass catcher, which I think he's decent, but he's nothing to write home about in the passing game. So that is something definitely to watch out for there. I would still buy him, but that part of it is real. Like, you can't, you know, there's not so much you can do as a fantasy player when you're not getting the carries, you're not getting the touches because the game flow won't allow it. But let's go ahead and move on to Seattle, another backfield that's kind of up in the air. I'm still not convinced that, you know, in week three of the preseason, Marshawn Lynch isn't going to be like, all right, I was just joking, no, like, I'm back. I'm still not quite ready to write that off yet, but, you know, you look past that, we'll assume he's out of the mix. Thomas Rawls is there, Christian Michael, who was, you know, football Twitter's, you know, darling for like the first couple years of his career, but it really hasn't shown much. They got a rookie there, CJ Procise, who's, you know, got some pretty good reviews, but has also been injured and banged up, and then, you know, hasn't seemed to be the clubhouse favorite there necessarily. It seems like Rawls is kind of the guy that is projected to open the year as a starter. I would love to invest in the Seattle backfield. I'm not at this point because if you told me any one of Rawls, Procise, or Michael opens the year as a starter, I wouldn't be completely shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked whoever wins the job. I think this is a very muddied situation. I have Thomas Rawls as my bust of the year in the Fantasy Football Pro Forecast magazine. I'm not drafting Rawls anywheres. There's different reports, different stories. It's been a tumultuous offseason. That is a pretty serious injury that he suffered, and he has not proven to me that he can do it over a 16-game season. I'm shocked at where his ADP is right now, though it has fallen. When I started looking at ADP in March, I think Rawls was going in the second round. It has dropped since then. And I like CJ Procise, but I think he's only most valuable in PPR leagues. I do not think Procise can run between the tackles. When I saw him at Notre Dame and I watched the film, he loved to bounce the ball to the outside, and his athletic ability was superior to the defensive linebacker, safeties, cornerbacks. So he got away with bouncing it outside and making something happen. I don't know if he's that special Barry Sanders athlete. My guess is he is not. He's not going to be able to bounce that ball outside at the NFL level and have success running the football. So that really bothers me. Now, he's a superior pass receiver. I think him and Kenneth Dixon were the two best pass receivers coming out of the college ranks and into the pros. So I think he is a mismatch problem. I think you could line him up at receiver. You can put him in motion. I think you can do real creative things with C.J. Procise in the passing game. But he still has to prove that he can pass block to get on the field. So I think there's limitations there. I don't have any interest in Michael. The one that I'm actually drafting a ton of is Alex Collins out of Arkansas. I think he fits the profile that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks are looking for. He's tough between the tackles. Unlike Procise, Alex Collins will explode and take on the linebackers. Now, I don't know if some of those home runs he hit at Arkansas, if he's going to be able to hit those home runs at the pro level, because there his time in the 40 was not spectacular at the combine. I think that's one of the main reasons he dropped. But what I do like is he's tenacious. He has fortitude, and he's willing to deliver a hit and take a hit. Now, I hate this analogy, but he does remind me of a mini Marshawn Lynch. Now, Marshawn Lynch is a special player, possible Hall of Famer. So it's hard for me to say anyone is going to hit the level of excellence that Marshawn Lynch did. But if you ask me from looking in a mirror, the player on that roster who could mirror what Lynch did by taking it between the tackles, I think that's Alex Collins. And I'm getting Alex Collins cheap in like round 14 and 15. He's the player that I'm banking on right now. In PPR leagues, I could see someone wanting Procise. But that's kind of how I look at the Seattle backfield right now.
That's completely fair. Another guy there that's just a super, super ultra deepest of deep leagues, just a guy that you shouldn't even have, but just keep an eye on him. Because, you're talking about guys that are, those all-worldly athletes. And that I do believe Bryce Brown kind of fits that. The problem with him is the football side of it, the taking care of the ball, the reading the blocks, being a running back. But if ever he could put it all together, I think Bryce Brown is a guy that you could see a Tim Hightower that, finally puts it all together at 28-30. Obviously, Hightower was injured, so his situation's a little different. But a guy that if he ever could just put it all together for year two, I think Bryce Brown could, break out somewhere, but he seems like kind of a knucklehead, so I'm not banking on it. But just a guy to kind of keep an eye on, just in case everything were to ever completely come together. I do think that there's a chance that he could be not special, but a very good fantasy player. Seattle has done a good job of developing players and kind of bringing late round undrafted guys into relevance. So just a guy to keep an eye on there. I mean, shit, like that backfield there is just as open for anybody there. So I mean, another guy, Bryce Brown finally put it all together. He looks great in camp. That's a storyline that wouldn't completely shock me. But yeah, don't give up anything of value at all for Bryce Brown. Just keep an eye on him. Moving on to the last team we'll talk about today for our running backs. That's the Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson. He had a very good end of the year. He personally knocked me out of the semifinals that I thought I had the best team and I thought I was going to win with that Week 15 game against Philadelphia where, I had 187 yards, 3 touchdowns, plus 42 yards and 4 catches on the air. This was in a PPR league, and so I thought that I was on my way to the championship, and then David Johnson just knocked me clean out of that. He has obviously shown he's special. Chris Johnson looked excellent before he got injured last year. That's kind of what opened the door for Johnson. Andre Ellington there has shown flashes. I could see him kind of regaining maybe some PPR relevance because he is very explosive in space. Bruce Arians is one of the better offensive minds in football. But I do think that David Johnson is clearing away probably the RB1 there. You've heard some noise about Chris Johnson may open the season as a starter. Like, I don't really care. I think Johnson will close this year as a starter. Very well-rounded player, had over 500 yards rushing, just under 500 catching last year. I like him quite a bit. I think that the one thing working against him is there is a lot of weapons in this Cardinals offense, and Arians is, like I said, a very good football mind, knows how to spread the ball around. Where are you valuing Johnson coming in this year?
I couldn't be any higher on David Johnson. I actually have him projected as my fantasy MVP for the 2016 season. I'm after the big three receivers. I have Johnson ranked number four on my board. I would be willing to take him in a redraft, dynasty league, anywheres, fourth overall. This is not hyperbole. I had Johnson highly ranked coming out of Northern Iowa. I have been able to see a little film of him. I watched all of the college all-star games with him in it. I watched him closely at the combine. I looked at the numbers on the stat sheets. He, to me, was a great prospect. And actually, I won a ton of playoff games with that big effort against Green Bay because I had drafted David Johnson last year in round 13 to 15 of every one of my fantasy teams. And I was lucky enough to be able to sit on him because early in the year he was returning those kicks and he was getting in the end zone. So there was no way I was going to cut him. And then he finally got his opportunity down the stretch and he was simply amazing. I love David Johnson this year in Bruce Arians' offense. Bruce Arians might be my favorite coach in the league. I'm rooting for him hard. I love the way he takes his deep shots down the field, but he also employs his running backs in the passing game. I love that offensive line he's put together in Arizona. I think Arizona's got one of the top three offenses in the NFL this year, as long as Carson Palmer can stay healthy, which I think he should. And I think Drew Stanton is getting better. I think, you know, hopefully this year, if he did have to play, Stanton would be a little bit better or stay on the field. Last time we saw Stanton, he got injured, which really derailed the Cardinals' 2014 season. But I love David Johnson. Him and Elliott are the two backs that I'm targeting in the first round. Obviously, it depends where you pick. I do love Todd Gurley also, but I think that Johnson and Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott are special, and they're coming at a little bit discounted of a price at the end of the first round. I love them. I'm not that interested in Chris Johnson. I will get him as a handcuff. I'm not too worried. Yes, maybe in a blowout, Chris Johnson gets some carries late in the game. But I'm of the belief if the Cardinals have blown someone out, I think David Johnson will be a big reason why they blew the opponent out, and you'll have gotten your fantasy points beforehand. So I feel really good with Johnson. I love him this year. And I agree with you. Andre Ellington, I've been reading that they might use him as a wideout. They might put him out in the slot. I think there's some value in PPR leagues for Andre Ellington. But go out and grab David Johnson. I have him as my fantasy MVP this year. I absolutely love him.
Yeah, I like Johnson a lot. I don't have him as my number one running back in any format, but he's firmly top five, easily, probably higher than that. I'm trying to think. I would for surely put Gurley ahead of him. And then after that, I think you kind of have, you know, David Johnson, Devonta Freeman. If you're talking redraft league, I think you got to throw Adrian Peterson in that mix for this year as well. And then I have Ezekiel Elliott just kind of in that same tier, maybe a little bit below those three, just because I do want to see him do it for a year. But yeah, he's firmly a top five running back. David Johnson, that is, in every format. If he's your running back one, you're going to be set pretty good no matter what your format is. So yeah, I guess that kind of does it. We'll probably start hitting wide receivers on the next show. I think at some point it might be kind of cool to take a little break in there and maybe try and get some Twitter questions or some email questions and kind of do, like, you know, some grade that trade or, like, some, you know, some off-season questions from, you know, some of the listeners just to kind of break up those position previews. But, yeah, I guess, is there anything else you want to add on these running backs today?
No, I mean, I still am a believer that if you really want to win a fantasy championship, I think your best avenue is with a bell cow stud running back. Now, I understand there's clearly risk, and last year was a disaster other than Adrian Peterson for first-round running backs. But I think fantasy fans are downgrading the bell cow runner, the stud runner. So I do think you can get value this year. Now, I am probably only looking to acquire one stud running back in the first three rounds. Then I'm probably going to go heavy receiver. And I think then I'm going to reach deep for the Charles Sims, the Duke Johnsons, and really work the waiver wire for the Tim Hightowers, the Deion Lewises, because we know there are going to be running backs like that who make an impact by the end of the season. But if I can still get that number one guy who's going to have 275 to 310 touches, I still think he's incredibly valuable in fantasy football leagues, and people are underrating them.
Yep, I agree with that completely. All right, well, I guess, you know, you said you had, David Johnson as your MVP, and I believe Rawls, you said, is your bust of the year. Where can people find that out?
Oh, that is it on footballdiehards.com. There's a lot of great stuff. It's actually a very good price. If you put diehards as the discount code, you end up, it's only $19.99 for the whole year. You get all of the magazines available for free online, plus all of the great information you need for DFS and season long throughout the season. I have a bunch of columns on there. I have podcasts on there, and there's lots of college football. I do college fantasy football. I'm recording podcasts now, and I have player previews. And during the offseason, we do all of the college draft prospects. So please go to footballdiehards.com, see what we got. There's a lot of great free information right now. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at GridironSkull91. I look forward to seeing you there, and I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, as always, make sure to check out the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast plus the Red Rock Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We got you covered in all the major sports. If you play Dynasty Fantasy Basketball, make sure to hit up my site, dynastyball.com. Check out that podcast as well. I just released my NBA Dynasty Rookie Rankings for this year's rookie class. It's got a lot of feedback on it last year. So, if, you know, you're a fan of the NBA, make sure to check those out as well. I mean, we've really got you covered, football, basketball, baseball, between the Red Rock stuff and then the few outside things that John and I do. We're pretty much all over. Give me a follow on Twitter at DinoBball. Like we said, if you like the podcast, or even if you don't, leave us an iTunes review. Let us know where we can improve or what things you like or what you want to hear more of. But yeah, I think with that being said, unless you got anything else to add, we'll wrap it up.
No, thanks, Jordan. I appreciate it so much.
Perfect. We'll talk to you next week, John.
Excellent.
Bye.